Call Me Joe by Poole Anderson. The wind came whooping out of eastern darkness, driving a lash of ammonia dust before it. In minutes, Edward Anglesey was blinded. He clawed all 4 feet into the broken shards, which were soil, hunched down and groped for his little smelter. The wind was an idiot bassoon in his skull. Something whipped across his back, drawing blood. A tree yanked up by the roots and spat 100 miles. Lightning cracked immensely far overhead where clouds boiled with night. As if to reply, thunder toned in the ice mountains, and a red gout of flame jumped, and a hillside came booming down, spilling itself across the valley. The earth shivered.
Sodium explosion,
thought Anglesey in the drumbeat noise. The fire and the lightning gave him enough illumination to find his apparatus. He picked up tools and muscular hands, his tail gripped the trough, and he battered his way to the tunnel and thus to his dugout. It had walls and roof of water, frozen by sun remoteness and compressed by tons of atmosphere jammed onto every square inch. Ventilated by a tiny smoke hole, a lamp of tree oil burning in hydrogen made a dull light for the single room. Anglesey sprawled his slate-blue form on the floor, panting. It was no use to swear at the storm. These ammonia gales often came at sunset, and there was nothing to do but wait them out. He was tired anyway. It would be morning in 5 hours or so. He had hoped to cast an axe head, his first, this evening. But maybe it was better to do the job by daylight. He pulled a decapod body off a shelf and ate the meat raw, pausing for long gulps of liquid methane from a jug. Things would improve once he had proper tools, and so far everything had been painfully grubbed and hacked to shape with teeth, claws, chance icicles, and what detestably weak and crumbling fragments remained of the spaceship. Give him a few years. He'd be living as a man should. He sighed, stretched, and lay down to sleep. Somewhat more than 112,000 miles away, Edward Anglesey took off his helmet. He looked around, blinking. After the Jovian surface, it was always a little unreal to find himself here, again, in the clean, quiet orderliness of the control room. His muscles ached. They shouldn't. He had not really been fighting a gale of several 100 miles an hour under 3 gravities and a temperature of 140 absolute. He'd been here, in the almost non-existent pull of Jupiter 5, breathing oxynitrogen. It was Joe who lived down there, filled his lungs with hydrogen and helium at a pressure which could still only be estimated because it broke aneroids and deranged piezoelectrics. Nevertheless, his body felt worn and beaten. Tension, no doubt, psychosomatics. After all, for a good many hours now, he had, in a sense, been Joe, and Joe had been working hard. With the helmet off, Anglesey held only a thread of identification. The S-projector was still tuned to Joe's brain, but no longer focused on his own. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he knew an indescribable feeling of sleep. Now and then, vague forms or colors drifted in the soft black. Dreams? Not impossible that Joe's brain should dream a little when Anglesey's mind wasn't using it. A light flickered red on the S-projector panel, and a bell whined electronic fear. Anglesey cursed. Thin fingers danced over the controls of his chair. He slewed around and shot across to the bank of dials. Yes! There! K-tube! Oscillating again! The circuit blew out. He wrenched the faceplate off with one hand and fumbled in a drawer with the other. Inside his mind, he could feel the contact with Joe fading. If he once lost it entirely, he wasn't sure he could regain it. And Joe was an investment of several $1 million and quite a few highly skilled man-years. Anglesey pulled the offending K-tube from its socket and threw it on the floor. Glass exploded. It eased his temper a bit, just enough so he could find a replacement, plug it in, switch on the current again. As the machine warmed up, once again amplifying, the Jonas in the back alleys of his brain strengthened. Slowly, then, the man in the electric wheelchair rolled out of the room and into the hall. Let somebody else sweep up the broken tube. To hell with it. To hell with everybody. Jan Cornelius had never been farther from Earth than some comfortable lunar resort. He felt much put upon that the Sonics Corporation should tap him for a 13-month exile. The fact that he knew as much about S-projectors and their cranky innards as any other man alive was no excuse. Why send anyone at all? Who cared? Obviously, the Federation Science Authority did. It had seemingly given these bearded hermits a blank check on the taxpayers' account. Thus did Cornelius grumble to himself all along hyperbolic path to Jupiter. Then the shifting acceleration of approach to its inner satellite left him too wretched for further complaint. And when he finally, just prior to disembarkation, went up to the greenhouse for a look at Jupiter, he said not a word. Nobody does the first time. Arnibikin waited patiently while Cornelius stared.
"It still gets me, too," he remembered. "By the throat. Sometimes I'm afraid to look."
At length, Cornelius turned around. He had a faintly Jovian appearance himself, being a large man with an imposing girth. "I had no idea," he whispered. "I never thought. I had seen pictures, but..." Viken nodded. "Sure, Dr. Cornelius. Pictures don't convey it." Where they stood, they could see the dark broken rock of the satellite, jumbled for a short way beyond the landing slip and then chopped off sheer. The moon was scarcely even a platform, it seemed, and cold constellations went streaming past around it. Jupiter lay across a fifth of the sky, softly amorous, banded with colors, spotted with the shadows of planet-sized moons, and with whirlwinds as broad as Earth. If there had been any gravity to speak of, Cornelius would have thought, instinctively, that the great planet was falling on him. As it was, he felt as if it sucked upward. His hands were still sore where he had grabbed the rail to hold on. "You live here? All alone? With this?" He spoke feebly.
"Oh, well, there are some 50 all told. Pretty congenial," said Viken. "It's not so bad. You sign up for 4-cycle hitches, 4-ship arrivals. And believe it or not, Dr. Cornelius, this is my 3rd enlistment."
The newcomer forebore to inquire more deeply. There was something not quite understandable about the men of Jupiter 5. They were mostly bearded, though otherwise careful to remain neat. Their low-gravity movements were somewhat dreamlike to watch. They hoarded their conversation as if to stretch it through the year and a month between ships. Their monkish existence had changed them. Or did they take what amounted to vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience because they had never felt quite at home on green Earth? 13 months. Cornelius shuddered. It was going to be a long, cold wait, and the pay and bonuses accumulating for him were scant comfort now, 480 million miles from the sun.
"Wonderful place to do research," continued Viken. "All the facilities, hand-picked colleagues, no distractions, and of course..."
He jerked his thumb at the planet and turned to leave. Cornelius followed, wallowing awkwardly.
It's very interesting, no doubt," he puffed. "Fascinating, but really, Dr. Viken, to drag me out here and make me spend a year plus waiting for the next ship, to do a job that may only take a few weeks."
"Are you sure it's that simple?" asked Viken gently. His face swiveled around, and there was something in his eyes that silenced Cornelius. "After all my time here, I've yet to see any problem, however complicated, which, when you look at it the right way, didn't become still more complicated." They went through the ship's airlock and tube joining it to the station entrance. Nearly everything was underground. Rooms, laboratories, even halls had a degree of luxuriousness. Why, there was a fireplace with a real fire in the common room. God alone knew what that cost. But thinking of the huge, chill emptiness where the King Planet laired, and of his own 1-year's sentence, Cornelius decided that such luxuries were, in truth, biological necessities. Viken showed him to a pleasantly furnished chamber which would be his own. "We'll fetch your luggage soon, and unload your sonic stuff. Right now, everybody's either talking to the ship's crew or reading his mail." Cornelius nodded absently and sat down. The chair, like all low-gravity furniture, was a mere spidery skeleton, but it held his bulk comfortably enough. He felt in his tunic, hoping to bribe the other man into keeping him company a while. "Cigar? I brought some from Amsterdam." "Thanks." Viken accepted with disappointing casualness, crossed long, thin fingers, and blew grayish clouds.
Are you in charge here?"
"Not exactly. No one is. We do have one administrator, the cook, to handle what little work of that type may come up. Don't forget, this is a research station, first, last, and always."
"What's your field, then?"
Viken frowned.
"Don't question anyone else so bluntly, Dr. Cornelius," he warned. They'd rather spin their gossip out as long as possible with each newcomer. It's a rare treat to have someone where every last conceivable reaction hasn't been, oh, no apologies to me, it's all right, I'm a physicist, specializing in solid state at ultra-high pressures. He nodded at the wall. Plenty of it to be observed. There.
I see. Cornelius smoked quietly for a while, then.
I'm supposed to be the sonics expert, but frankly, at present, I've no idea why your machine should misbehave as reported.
You mean those, K-tubes have a stable output on Earth?
And on Luna, Mars, and Venus.
Everywhere, apparently, but here. Cornelius shrugged.
Of course. The side beams are always persnickety, and sometimes you get an unwanted feedback when... No. I'll get the facts before I theorize.
Who are your Simon?
Just Anglesey, who's not a formally trained S-man at all. But he took it up after he was crippled and showed such a natural aptitude that he was shipped out here when he volunteered. It's so hard to get anyone for Jupiter 5 that we aren't fussy about degrees. At that, Ed seems to be operating Joe about as well as a PSD could.
Ah, yes, you're pseudo-Jovians. I'll have to examine that angle pretty carefully, too, said Cornelius.
In spite of himself, he was getting interested.
Maybe the trouble comes from something in Joe's biochemistry. Who knows? I'll let you into a carefully guarded little secret, Dr. Viken. Sonics is not an exact science.
Neither is physics, grinned the other man. After a moment, he added more soberly, not my brand of physics, anyway. I hope to make it exact. That's why I'm here, you know. It's the reason we're all here.